Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It is 4 minutes after the hour. Welcome to Friday, January 26th. Believe it or not, the Super Bowl festivities begin today in Minneapolis. 10-day festival. There's going to be all kinds of concerts and football-related experiences about through seven blocks in downtown. And, of course, all of these events run through Super Bowl Sunday, which is a week from Sunday. So that is some of the excitement going on in my hometown, but we've got much more important things to talk about this morning. And I do want to start with a passage from Ephesians. I've been reading Ephesians, all six chapters, almost every day the last 2 weeks. And it says in Ephesians 1, verse 15, "For this reason, ever since I heard about your faith in the Lord Jesus and your love for all God's people, I have not stopped giving thanks for you, remembering you in my prayers. I will keep asking that the God of our Lord Jesus Christ, the glorious Father, may give you the spirit of wisdom and revelation so that you may know him better." That's what Paul's wish was, that you may know him better. So happy Friday, another day where we continue the story of who he is and who we are. And today is the day the Lord has made. Let us be glad and rejoice in it. I saw today in the paper that the CEO of Google says artificial intelligence is more important than fire or electricity. I just don't know how that robot is going to heat my reduction sauce for my tuna steak or maybe cool my house in the summer. That's a little bit of a bold statement. Speaking of bold, we've got Carmen the Bird. She's already on our studio line. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to reconnect with Carmen in just a minute. It's 6 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us this morning. Be right back. Good morning. It is 7 minutes after the hour. I have on our studio line Carmen LaBurge, host of Reconnect with Carmen and also Faith Radio new family member. Carmen, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Bill.
Well, I've been following a little bit of this trial, this Larry Nassar's abuse trial of all the this doctor that was taking advantage of gymnasts. And I saw that the judge said, "You're looking at 175 years. Wouldn't it just be easier to say you ain't getting out?"
She basically said, "I'm issuing, I'm signing your death warrant."
Yeah, I did see that.
She definitely recognized what she was doing. I think that the storyline that I hope people will pay attention to out of all of this is the amazing testimony of the very last, the very last person to speak at the sentencing trial, who was also the very first person to bring a charge against him. Mm-hmm. She happens to be a very, very vibrant Christian woman, and her testimony is filled with biblical language and real theology. And so the best theology out there this week came in the form of a testimony delivered in a courtroom in Michigan by a woman named Rachel Den Hollander. And so I want people, if they haven't listened to it or read it, her full victim impact statement is actually published far and wide. The full testimony actually published on the CNN website. And I want to focus people in, Bill, on the reality of speaking the truth in whatever context God gives you to speak it. Speak it clearly, speak it honestly, and then let the truth do its work. She came right out and said, "I know that this is evil. I know what evil is because I know what goodness is. I can recognize evil. We can recognize evil and wickedness in the world because we can know what goodness is." She actually said, "I can speak the truth about my abuse without minimization or mitigation because, I know what's truly good. It is, she talks about repentance. She talks about the reality of forgiveness and that it's even available to him, but it's going to require him coming to a place where he understands what he did and he genuinely repents of it before God. It is extraordinary theology in a week where, you know, frankly, people with big titles in the evangelical world have been delivering really bad theology in public. Mm-hmm. This is a woman who delivered some really good theology in the context of the public square.
Well, I was fascinated by the link, so I clicked on it, and I thought, well, I'll watch a minute of it, and I couldn't stop. Mm. I mean, this woman was poised and articulate and firm and loving and, you know, confronting her abuser and doing it with this grace that could only have come from God.
I think that's exactly right. You can tell that this is a person for whom, you know, God is not an idea. Truth mm-hmm. is not an idea. Forgiveness is not an idea. They are realities in her life. She is living out of the experience, having experienced the reality of God herself, having experienced the reality of grace herself. She is able to stand there with the dignity of a child of God and confront her abuser in a very public setting and do so not only full of truth, but full of grace. It is an extraordinary testimony to the way God can speak through a human being, taking that which one individual meant for evil mm-hmm. and transform it into something good.
Mm-hmm. When I think of an adult who is in a position of power and authority, taking advantage of a child and taking their innocence, there are a few things that make my blood boil more.
Yeah, the sickness, the perversion and sickness and evil of this story is very, it should trouble us all. Mm-hmm. And I think that as we survey our culture today, the fruits of unrighteousness are many. Mm-hmm. And we can as Christians look at that and we can, we can bemoan the reality that we live in a generation where the fruit is largely unrighteous. And then I want us to also see that there are fruits of righteousness growing in this culture. And Rachel Denhollander is an example of that. Mm-hmm. So how can we as Christians today, wherever we are, in whatever sphere of influence we have, how can we till and cultivate and water the kind of fruit that this young woman, that God has produced in the life of this young woman, even as we find ways to bring justice and let righteousness flow in areas of our culture that are producing fruits of unrighteousness. Because we actually have to be people who, you know, not only like, I guess I think about Nehemiah, we got to have one hand building the wall, right? Mm-hmm. Fruits of righteousness, while we keep our sword ready, because there is a lot of unrighteousness, and we are responsible to call that out and call it out where we can.
Mm-hmm. So let's give our listeners a little bit of homework over the weekend. Do Google Rachel Denhollander or the testimony of a gymnast who confronted her abuser in court. That would be something that I think we would all learn a lot from and gain a lot from, just because this testimony is so powerful.
You know, the reality, Bill, is if somebody, you know, if your pastor's missing this Sunday for whatever reason, just run this testimony, because it's a sermon. It's sermonic.
Yeah, it really is. It's really good. Okay, the Senate confirmed Sam Brownback as Religious Freedom Ambassador. We like that, don't we?
Yeah, this is an important story for folks, not only, you know, here nationally in the U.S., but internationally for the witness of America in terms of how it is that we speak into international religious liberty issues, how we stand for those around the globe who are persecuted religious minorities, no matter what their faith persuasion is, no matter what context they live in. I think that one of the things that we need to do as Christians is be praying for Sam Brownback. He did not have what you and I would consider enthusiastic support.
No,
hardly. You know, when they took this vote.
Right.
And so Vic Pence actually had to step in and break the tie, right? It was 49 to 49 vote,
yep.
And he had to break the tie. So let's be praying for him. I do think that it's important to recognize that our internal U.S. politics is what produced a split vote. Once Sam Brownback is actually in this position and able to serve as the ambassador for international religious liberty on behalf of the United States, he will have the full support of everybody, because what he will be doing internationally has very little to do with the reasons that people voted against him in terms of his confirmation.
Yes.
So, you know, he happens to be a conservative Christian, and he, you know, he holds a view of marriage that is between one man and one woman. That plays well internationally. It may not play well here at home.
Yes. And he also has strong pro-life positions. And so he was he was a very polarizing guy in Canada, a very unpopular governor.
Yeah, both of those things are true. And and yet I think that when we talk about international religious liberty concerns, we are talking about a largely, you know, pro-life and pro-traditional marriage crowd. And so, you know, when he's doing what he's now called to do internationally, I do think we're going to see a guy who is able to advocate for religious minorities in areas of religious conflict and oppression around the globe in admirable ways. And that's really what the job is.
Mm-hmm. Carmen, let me take a break. When I come back, I want to talk a little bit about Generation Z that are probably just getting up and getting ready to go to school and not listening to Faith Radio this morning, but they might be. But let's talk about that when we come back. It is 16 minutes after the hour. Talking to Carmen LeBurge. We'll be right back. It is 19 minutes after the hour. I'm talking to Carmen LeBurge from Reconnect with Carmen and from Faith Radio. And Carmen, Generation Z, that's about 70 million kids. They were born between about 1999 and 2015. They don't know what life is like without a smartphone or a tablet in front of their face. So they're really tech addicted. They're really savvy when it comes to technology. But they are creating a little bit of a issue and problem for the church, aren't they?
So a lot of folks who are listening right now are thinking to themselves, wow, I thought we were still talking about millennials when we were talking about teenagers or young adults, and that would be inaccurate. So Generation Z is now everybody pretty much under the age of 19, and it's curious that they sort of cut it off at 2015, which means the kids born in the last couple of years, you know, are in a generation that's going to be identified beyond Generation Z. So it'll be curious to see what they come up with, what's beyond the letter Z. So Generation Z, you know, everybody that you now encounter and run into who's 12, 13, 14, 15, 18, 19, we're talking about a huge number of people in our culture. We're actually talking about the drivers now of new ideas and new technology when it comes to particularly those things that are social media driven. This important survey that was just published by the Barna Group, it reveals that teenagers in Generation Z, which means every teenager today, so every teenager today is now in a generation that is at least twice as likely as you and I, American adults, to identify as two things that are going to be troubling to people who do student ministry. So this group of people identifies, 12% of them identify as something other than heterosexual, and a large percentage of them identify as atheist. Mm-hmm. Now, I want you to think back to when you were 14, and if somebody had asked you the question, you know, how do you identify in terms of your sexuality? First of all, it would have been a ridiculous question to be asked. You wouldn't have had any categories to think in other than heterosexuality. And you probably would not have had any idea what terms like transgender even meant. Bisexuality would not have even likely been something that you knew enough about to say, oh, well, I thought about that, and yeah, that's who I am. And so part of this is asking questions of people whose minds aren't actually fully developed enough to answer the questions they're being asked. I think that's important for us to know. Inside the church, we got to be ready to have very different kinds of conversations that start with conversations about identity. What is our core identity? Who gives us that identity? From whom is that identity derived? And it's not our sexuality. We are not our sexuality. And so I think that for student ministries out there and people doing ministry with kids and families, this is really important research to be reading and understanding and then applying in the life of the church. The atheist question, I think, Bill, is even maybe more significant. It's beneath or behind the question about sexuality. If I genuinely don't know God, I cannot know myself. And so if we're asking a sexuality question before we're asking a God question, we're asking the questions in the wrong order anyway.
Oh, I agree. When you look at the way kids that age by nature are going to want to be rebellious, and then you start introducing the idea through social media that there are, I don't know, 64 different genders, you're just, it's the wheel of fortune. Well, why don't I find something that's going to be novel and special to me? That's the way kids think for the most part, don't they?
Yes, and so if belonging is a really high value among this particular group, they want to belong, and the way to belong is to become the most sort of avant-garde, unusual character out there. If that's what makes you attractive to others in your peer group, then yeah, what we're pushing kids towards is you know, is being as weird as possible in order that they can fit in to the weird, you know, to the as weird as possible age group that they're in. That sort of trends in a direction that we probably don't want to encourage. And so I think that for Christians, one of the things we have to help kids recognize is the most countercultural thing that you can be is a person who believes in God and a person who then becomes godly. That's actually the weirdest thing you could be in your generation.
Right.
And so I think that in terms of student ministries and church life, that's probably what we want to be focusing on. Jesus was a pretty weird guy. He was a standout in his culture, but he gives people a sense of belonging that goes way beyond anything that this world can offer.
Yeah. I like to point out to kids little funny things, like there was a T-shirt that said, on the T-shirt it said, there are not just two genders. So if you wanted to order the T-shirt, you know, you naturally would need to pick a size. So you scroll down to the menu and it's got two options, male or female. So when it comes to buying.
Right. And so it does come down. There really is a binary reality to creation.
Yes,
and in terms of how we're made in the image of God, male and female. And obviously that's where we start this conversation once we get to the Bible. But getting kids into a conversation about the Bible requires we have a relationship with them. We understand where they're coming from. And that's what I think this this new research helps us do as adults. It helps us get into the minds of this particular Generation Z.
Yeah. Carmen, I know the president had a little bit of a scandal, whether it was adulterous or not. We don't know for sure, but there has been a number of evangelical leaders, Jerry Falwell Jr., Tony Perkins, and others that sort of gave him a little bit of a pass on that. What are your thoughts on that?
First of all, I think that what is actually at issue here is the truth. And so, you know, we could circle right back around, Bill, to the first conversation that we had today, which is about what took place in a courtroom in Michigan. The question really before us as a people is, you know, what is appropriate and inappropriate sexual activity and relationships between in our culture? What do we consider normal and acceptable? It is not normal nor acceptable for an individual to, outside of the commitment that they've made in marriage, to have a relationship with a person who, in this case, is an adult film star. And it's not appropriate to be consuming that that kind of material that's being produced. I recognize we live in a pornified culture, but that's not okay for Christians. It's not okay for anybody. And so what's at issue is the truth. What's at issue is what it means to be a Christian. And if the fruit being produced in a person's life now, you can look to that and you can say, okay, that's what a Christian life looks like. And so I'm not willing to give the president a pass over and over again. I don't think this is a game of golf. I don't think we keep giving mulligans. I think we look at the fruit of a person's life right now, and if that person claims to be a Christian, we begin expecting them to sound and look and act like a Christian. And I don't think that for other Christians to publicly say, oh, well, he's not that person anymore, when the fruit of his life now is frankly very, is not significantly different than the fruit of his life when these allegations were made. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, you judge a tree by its fruit. And so let's have a fruit of righteousness conversation. And let's talk about love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, and self-control. And if we're seeing a person who's disciplined in his own life and uses language that builds people up and recognizes the imago Dei of every human being, no matter where they're born and the circumstances under which they live, you know, then I think we're starting to say, hey, this is a Christian. We can see the evidence in his life that this is a Christian. Otherwise, mm-hmm. what we have to recognize is we have an elected president. Mm-hmm. And there's no need for me to defend whether or not he's a Christian. There's a I need to pray for him as an elected official. And obviously, I submit to his authority as the president of the United States. I don't need to defend his faith or his faithfulness.
Yeah. Time flies when you're talking to Carmen. Have a great weekend, Carmen. And thanks for chatting. I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Bill.
You bet. 28 minutes after the hour, we'll take a break and then we'll listen to Ken Davis at Lighten Up. Good morning. It's 31 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a little break for news. But when we come back at about 20 minutes to, we're going to talk to Dr. Rosemary Stein. I don't know if you've heard about this, the new Tide Pod Challenge, where kids are challenging each other to eat these Tide Pods. That is confusing to me. We're going to find out more about that in just a few minutes. It is 25 minutes until the top of the hour. Speaking of 25, 25% of Americans say they don't have one close personal friend. Bill DeMint talks about the power of friendship and how it can benefit you.
Let me tell you about the contrast in that, which is the good news is that I believe it was Buckminster Fuller who said, environment is more powerful than willpower. 3 years ago, I got a group of five other guys together to form a mastermind group. And we have a devotional component, but a lot of it's just business. You know, how are you doing in your business? Are you making good choices? Checking in with each other. And you know, that group, which is a little bit different than a Bible study, it's more of a business group, has had a tremendous impact on all of our lives, our careers. Our wives are involved with that as well. But it really highlights this idea that you can try to make changes on your own. And I want to speak to the listener that has had a challenge. Maybe they wanted to lose weight. Maybe they wanted to do better in work. Maybe they've wanted to do better with their savings. But getting yourself surrounded with people that are doing it themselves and connecting socially has a profound spiritual, emotional, and other effect in many different areas of our lives. And I always say, and Marcus and I say this in our book, is don't spend another year trying harder. Get more connected. You're going to get where you want to get much quicker than having the best intentions, trying to fire those excuses, and just being dismayed by the end of the year that it didn't happen for you as a Lone Ranger.
That is good counsel. If you want to hear that full interview by Dr. Bill DeMint, you can go to myfaithradio.com and type in what's your excuse. That should get you there. Next up, a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. You know who has that theme song. Anyway, she is up next. Be back in a minute.
In present-day America, the battle to maintain the First Amendment has boiled down to the issues surrounding homosexual behavior. This is Jim Garlow. Who would have thought that to be true 50 or even 25 years ago? The coerced acceptance of homosexual behavior and homosexual marriage have become the vortex for the crushing of the first portions of our Bill of Rights. Religious liberty is under attack from sexual anarchists who believe there's a God-given right to sexual lawlessness. It must be remembered, every sinful act is by definition a lawless one. But homosexual activists have been very successful propagandizing their movement by appeal to emotions. After all, they say, love is love. Individuals and society pays and pays dearly when we reject God's gracious and life-giving laws. Be well-versed at jimgarlow.com.
go down, medicine go down. Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in a most delightful way.
It is 20 minutes until the top of the hour. That music belongs to Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Good morning, Dr. Rose.
Good morning, Mr. Bill. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. All right, I have to start with something with you because it's so nutty to me. You must talk about this Tide Pod Challenge. This came out of left field to me.
Me too. When I read that article,
okay,
I'm thinking, what is going on out there? Except that about a year ago, we were standing at the Wendy's, and I can't remember how this particular patient got my husband's cell phone, but his cell phone rang, and it was a patient's parent, and he said, "My son," and it was either that he swallowed a Tide Pod or something similar to that. Can you talk to him? And he was about to pass the phone over to his son. And we're looking at each other dismayed, like, what? The world is wacky now. There were so many things that were sort of wrong about that. We were like, what is going on? And so we stopped, you know, being in line at the Wendy's and sat down. And Dave said, well, how about you bring Stephen in and we can talk, you, me, him together about doing things that are, excuse me, listeners, stupid.
Right. So maybe if you would talk about what it is we're talking about, which is this challenge kids are having with each other to take one of these Tide Pods and eat it.
And so the thing is that there will be something new. Today is the Tide Pod, the pod for the detergent. It's a convenient thing. Moms love it because instead of measuring out the detergent and how much a softener to use and mm-hmm. Et cetera, it's all together in this little thingy.
And so and colorful and pretty.
Yeah, and it's because it's pretty cells. And so now kids have taken on swallowing this thing and telling each other, I dare you to do it. Well, you know, we used to have dares too. And dares are really dumb things. And since we're not allowed to call things or, you know, people when they do dumb things, stupid, we're not allowed to say, you know what? I'm not doing that. That's stupid. That's not anything else but a really dumb thing to do. And so what we should be teaching our children is don't do dumb things and figure out how not to succumb to peer pressure to do things that are just dumb and be able to call dumb for what it is, just plain old dumb, because there will be something else. It's not just a Tide Pod. It used to be water. It was I double dog dare you to do to lick the remember in the Christmas story to put your tongue on the frozen pole. It's going to be something else.
Mm-hmm.
No, that is dumb, and you walk away. And that's mm-hmm. what parents are not teaching their kids anymore, because we don't want to use words that perhaps can be a little offensive.
Yeah. Now, Dr. Rose, the word dumb came up pretty fast in your vocabulary. How do you deal with this as a pediatrician when you get a parent in with a son and that's an issue? How do you refrain?
I'm the pediatrician who, with a smile and lots of love, and the parents know that I just love their kids so much that I'll say the words that they're thinking. And so when I say, you know what, let me use the word that your friends would use. Well, that's dumb, or that's something that per se is stupid. And we're allowed to use that word for something that has that. Now, you know, obviously, I'm not asking you to use that word for a person, but doing that is dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And so you call a spade a spade, and everybody laughs, but it gives the kid strength. It makes him realize, no, I'm not being weak for turning something down. But so when the kid came in, Stephen came in, and we addressed what was going on. Why were you going to swallow this thing? He was up against a challenge, and he's a pretty strong kind of looking kid, but he's kind of quiet, and he was being pushed around a little bit. So his self-image was getting tossed down. This kid isn't dumb, but he felt that he was weak.
And so he was put into a position where he had to show that he was stronger, and he had some guts to him. And he didn't know how to show that without actually just doing what he was told to do. And that's where we have to have those conversations with our kids and talk around the table and get them ready for life, because at one point or another, there will be the double dog dare moment.
Oh, yeah. Now, do we ever talk about positive peer pressure, where all of a sudden a group of good kids are doing good things and there's a certain kind of attraction to that? That don't we want to encourage kids to either create their own positive peer pressure versus caving into little stunts like this?
That's right, and that has a lot to do with the friends that you hang out with. And sometimes those friends that are in the popular group aren't necessarily the ones that are going to create the best self-image for your kid. And so that's another thing that is very important for you to start talking about. But parents, you know, kids sometimes, they don't have wheels, so that you have to be forming these relationships. And it might seem to them that, you know, that going to a church and helping underprivileged kids in an after-school program, that's kind of boring, and they roll their eyes. But you you go yourself and you invest the time in it, and the kids somehow at some point said, you know what, this is cool, and they start bringing other kids over. You have to create these experiences for your kid. And don't think that it's all going to be fun and games and your kid's going to be just sort of laughing and saying, oh, this is wonderful. It's going to be work. And when we're willing to invest this work and this time in the kid, it will pay off.
Yeah. Dr. Rose, let me take a little break. When I come back, I'm always interested in getting your take on what's happening, especially through the winter months. We're still looking at kind of a wicked flu season, and it's been especially hard on kids. I was just reading of a story of a kid who came back from a little hockey trip and ended up dying from the flu. So you hear those stories and your heart just sinks. And I want to get your observations and your recommendations on what we can do to be smart between now and the end of the flu season. I'm talking to Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association, and it's 14 minutes until the top of the hour. Be right back. It is 12 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Dr. Rose, over the weekend, I was reading a story of a 10-year-old boy who died from complications from the flu. He was returning from a hockey tournament in Western New York. And, you know, he was starting to feel a little bit sick on Thursday, but he really wanted to travel with his team to Buffalo for this weekend sports trip. And then he left the tournament early. Things got worse. He ended up going into the hospital, and a couple of days later, he died. So this, I've got a lot of questions for you. Number one is, when kids want to do what they want to do, they really want to do what they want to do. It's hard to tell them, no, you're not taking that hockey trip if you're not feeling 100%. Because kids go, I feel good enough to go. And I'm not saying anything negative towards the parents. I'm just saying this is the way we kind of operate, don't we?
We do. And I so feel for that mom and dad that made the decision to let him go. So No, absolutely no judgment here, because you're torn, and you know, your common sense is telling you that he shouldn't go, and then your heart is saying, but he really wants to be with his friends, and it's really tough. But for something more positive, I tell my parents that illnesses are God's way, nature's way of telling us that we have to slow down. So when you're sick, you're asking me, should I go take the test? Should I go on this trip? And your doctor is going to say, my suggestion is no. Every time I'm going to say, my suggestion is no. Now, you're going to do what you're going to do, but my suggestion is stay home. You don't want to get others sick, but I think nature is telling you to slow down right now. I don't know why, but I think that you're supposed to be home and enjoy the company of your family and be surrounded by the love that the people who love you have for you. Mm-hmm. And they get that. When I say it that way, they get it. Okay, slow down right now. I think that something's going on that you need, your body needs to slow down. We've had a lot of kids who've come in with the flu And I say, this is the time where you need that chicken soup. You need that warm tea with some herbal tea with some honey in it, and you need to be home. I can give you some medicine that'll help you get better a little faster, but these are the real things that are going to make you feel better. And they smile because they know that that's true. That's common sense. And so please, parents, when you see your kids like that, or yourself, because I see so many parents that run themselves down because they think, I have to go to work. You know, when that little twinge is telling you, I am sick, then you got to slow down. If you lose your job over that, well, then so be it. That seems like a really tragic thing to say. But we'd rather not have the job than not have you, and your kids need you. You don't want to be that kid. You don't want to overplay it or teach kids to overplay their illnesses. You want to teach them to have good, logical, common sense and balance. Mm-hmm. And that's what's tough in all of this. But when you approach illness as we got to slow down, we need to hover around and love on you right now, then the kids understand and then they develop that sort of healthy kind of perspective on illness.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Rose, I know kids just absolutely love their friends. They can't wait to be with their friends, and they can't get enough of their friends. But there are still a large percentage of kids that don't have a lot of friends. And oftentimes when I hear stories of behavior, really horrible behavior by a kid, they always trace it to a kid who was quite lonely and felt like an outcast and a pariah of sorts. And out of anger and frustration, they do something almost criminal, or I shouldn't say almost, they do something criminal. Now, I'm not pointing those kids specifically, but I'm saying there are a lot of kids today that are suffering from a loneliness almost epidemic, which is crazy to me because kids should be with other kids all the time.
And it's so terrible right now. And you know what? A lot of this comes, I saw that article and it was talking about screen time and that kids that are involved in screen time tend to be much more lonely. But you know, 40, 50 years ago when we were kids and we didn't have screens, there was a lot of loneliness also. And I think what it comes down to is the relationships that we have. That kid who doesn't sit at the table with mom and dad, whose mom and dad sort of just are too distracted to be spending time with him or her, who forms relationships that are unhealthy with other kids, that kid's going to be in the end. Whether he has friends and he hangs out with gang members and they do stuff together, he or she is lonely because that soul is not being fed.
Right.
And that's what it comes down to. And there can be nothing more detrimental than that, than, you know, a little rectangle that is drawing you in and is distracting you from the relationships. And that's why we're seeing it more today, because that lack of relationship is being really accentuated by the rectangle that is the computer or the tablet or whatever electronic device is separating that kid from his friends, his parents, his family.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I see it every day, and I feel for these kids.
I do too. So Medical Journal says that adolescence is now around age 24. Where did that come from? Because doctors don't sit around and say kids are going to be kids till 24. I would hope you guys wouldn't be saying that. Did that come from an earlier administration that said we need to keep kids on insurance till 24 or 26. Where did this whole idea come from?
Well, and if you think about it, our kids are behaving like they're 18-year-olds when they are 24, and they're behaving like 12 and 13-year-olds when they're 18. So therefore, I think that's where 30 years ago we raised the age for kids to drink, because we're thinking, well, we can't give an 18-year-old alcohol. So what's really happening is our kids are maturing at a much slower level. And so a kid who you think would be an adult and able to make adult decisions is anything but. So we're starting to say, well, kids are not adults until they're 24 or they're 26. And really what's happening is we're not allowing them to go to the process, through the process of maturing, because we, the parent, we're not realizing the normal developmental phases of a kid. And it's just like, for example, toilet training. We're toilet training our kids at 3 or 4 versus 1.5 to 2. Well, that's delaying maturity there. And that has a cascade. and the cascade results in our kids being much more immature when they're supposed to be adults.
Wow. You know, it's interesting. There was a previous generation that would, you know, they were 16 and they would lie that they were 18 so they could go join the Navy. I mean, there was a certain mentality that I wanted to grow up. I wanted to be on my own. I wanted to be an independent adult. And that has changed in the next generation, hasn't it?
It sure has. And it's to the detriment of our kid. It's definitely not helping them out. They can't cope. And, you know, people call them snowflakes and they look down on them. And I feel for these kids.
Yeah,
because they don't have the tools that they need to be able to succeed in life. And so we as adults should see who in our community or our family members or grandchildren have this syndrome of being the immature adult and help them out. And they're not easy to help because they think they know everything.
Yeah.
But let's help them out.
Yeah. Dr. Rose, your wisdom is sound and your voice is comforting. Thank you so much for being on the show.
I love it. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great weekend. It's 3 minutes till the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up hour one in just a minute. Thanks very much to Dr. Rosemary Stein and Carmen LaBurge. What a great first hour. Next hour, we've got Jamar Tisby coming on the program at about 8 minutes after the hour. And then Dr. Glenn Pickering. We're going to talk about overcoming failures and how do we handle criticism. We don't do that very well at times. That's hour two coming up next on the Early Morning Late Show. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.